Welcome to Soil Stories with Nick and Leanna.
Episode 3, Redox and Microbes That Change Soil Color.
So today we're talking about redox reactions in soils, and that term sounds pretty daunting. Redox is actually short for oxidation and reduction, or reduction and oxidation reactions. And these are reactions that involve the transfer of electrons between two chemical species. We all depend on redox reactions right now, actually, to be alive. So aerobic respiration, what we're all doing right now, we all ate food today, hopefully, and the carbon that was in that food was reduced carbon. We take it in, and through respiration, we oxidize that carbon to carbon dioxide. And so we're breathing out the carbon that we ingested earlier as carbon dioxide in its oxidized form. We're also breathing in oxygen, and that oxygen gets reduced to water. And so in net, we are all consuming reduced carbon compounds, breathing in oxygen, releasing oxidized carbon compounds, and breathing out water vapor, which is that oxygen in reduced form.
Most people have seen a redox reaction occur in their kitchen. When an apple is cut, it turns brown over time. This is because enzymes and iron in the apple are exposed to air and undergo oxidation.
So oxygen is unique because it's an excellent electron acceptor. So in redox processes like aerobic respiration, where an electron is taken from a reduced carbon compound, think organic matter or food, boosted to a high energy state, and passed down a chain of molecules called an electron transport chain. Oxygen is at the bottom of that chain. It's happy to accept an electron from almost any other molecule. So the oxygen itself is reduced. It's gaining electrons. And it's reduced to water. Well, the carbon in the food you eat is oxidized to carbon dioxide, CO2. Because oxygen is the best electron acceptor, that electron has the farthest chemical fall, so to speak. You can kind of think about it like a waterfall or a dam. If you have a really big dam or a really high waterfall, there's a lot of energy you can harvest from the water. It has a long way to fall. Same thing is true with aerobic respiration. Because the electron has such a long way to fall chemically to oxygen, there's a lot of energy you can harvest out of aerobic respiration. Leanna and I wanted some help relating this to soil, so we figured we'd call in an expert.
My name is Karen Vaughn, and I'm an assistant professor of pedology at the University of Wyoming.
Karen's a soil superhero. In addition to being a national leader in soil science teaching, research, and outreach, she's a 2x mom, a distance runner, and an artist. You might know her from her Instagram handle, For the Love of Soil.
So in soils, redox reactions are generally microbially driven. And so those microorganisms that are performing this reaction, they need an energy source. And typically that's some sort of decomposable organic carbon source. You also need a microbial population that's capable of using that energy source in their metabolism. And then you need the compound itself, that terminal electron acceptor. The first compound for microorganisms to use as a terminal electron acceptor, because they get the most energy from it, is oxygen.
Using oxygen as a terminal electron acceptor is aerobic respiration. It's what we do. And it turns out there's a whole host of microorganisms in soils that make their living the same way. But when soils become saturated or filled with water, the oxygen concentration goes down dramatically. There's two reasons for this. The first is that oxygen diffuses 10,000 times slower through water than it does air. So if the soil is full of water, it's difficult for oxygen in the atmosphere to diffuse down into the soil. The second is because aerobic microorganisms continue to use the oxygen that's available until it's gone.
And so they'll gobble up that oxygen, convert it into water. And then once that oxygen's used up, they move down the ladder. And it's not necessarily the same microorganism. It's different organisms that are using different compounds. Nitrate is the next most energetically favorable, followed by manganese oxides, iron oxides, sulfate, and then down to methane.
One of the reasons that people think wetlands and wetland soils are stinky is because of the production of hydrogen sulfide, think the rotten egg smell, and methane gas by anaerobic microbes, way down on the redox ladder. So when soils become saturated and anaerobic, there are still microbes in them feasting on organic matter and using alternate electron acceptors. When iron is used as an alternate electron acceptor and reduced by microbes in wet soils, there's a dramatic effect on soil color.
Iron is a strong pigmenting agent in soil. So that brown color that you see, some of that brown is maybe related to organic matter, but a lot of it is iron. And when, like I said, those iron oxides are reduced, the iron is converted into a reduced form that is colorless and soluble. That means that it can move out of the system or it can just sort of hang out there. And what you see is a gray color. And that gray color isn't the iron oxide, it's the background color of the soil matrix. Those are just what the uncoated mineral grains look like. So those gray colors.
So iron reduction and the graying of a soil is a biologically mediated process done by microbes that are using iron as an alternate electron acceptor. But if the water drains from a soil and it becomes aerobic again, the reduced iron reoxidizes abiotically, just upon exposure to the oxygen in the air, no microbes needed. This is similar to the apple in your kitchen turning brown after you cut it open. Except when the iron reoxidizes in a soil, it doesn't occur evenly. Instead, the result is a fascinating, splotchy, irregular pattern of brightly colored iron oxides against a background of gray. Collectively, these are called redoxymorphic features.
So splotches, stains, mottles, rust. Maybe there's rust in the ground. People might say that. And that's the wonderful thing about soil color is that it's persistent. Is you can dig a hole during the driest time of the year and you're still going to see evidence of that water table.
The water table is a term used to describe the saturated zone in a soil. And it turns out it is never static. In some times of the year, the water table can be very high. In some cases, even above the soil surface. In other times of the year, it could be much deeper, depending on the balance between precipitation and evapotranspiration. Every soil and landscape are unique.
Because of those redoxymorphic features that formed through those redox reactions, you know, maybe it was the end of spring when you have your high water table, you'll be able to see them during the dry time of year.
So this is a huge deal. Just by looking at a soil and searching for the presence or absence of redoxymorphic features, we can tell where the seasonal high water table is. And that's incredibly useful in development, conservation, and waste management applications.
Is this area suitable for building a basement or putting in a septic tank? So practical applications like that, we need to know where the water table is. One of the areas that I work in mostly is in terms of wetland identification, hydric soil identification, and delineation. And so we'll use the type, amount, and location of redox features to identify how long is that persistent water table at that depth. And using that information, we can delineate a wetland or figure out where that boundary is and protect those areas from future development, things like that.
Okay, so now let's talk about waste applications. Chances are, if you live in an urban or suburban area, when you flush your toilet, your solid and liquid waste goes into a sewer main and is carried to a wastewater treatment plant. In rural areas, however, no such centralized waste disposal system exists. So people rely on septic systems, a tank that allows the solids to settle out and a drain field where the liquids are released to filter through the soil. But we don't want to put septic drain fields in places with high water tables.
That groundwater is going to interact with your septic materials, and that is the opposite of what we want to have happen.
Here, Karen is being very polite. By septic materials, she means poop water. But how do we know where to put a septic drain field unless we have information about where and how deep the seasonal high water table is? That is where redoxymorphic features come in. And identifying those features correctly plays a critical role in many areas where laws determine the different types of septic systems that must be installed depending on the conditions in the soil. So when a toilet is flushed in the country, where does the water go? To the soil and a waiting audience of microbes that will gobble up your waste.
Until next time, you guys, be well,
be safe,
and be smart.